eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
The Nationals did lose 2 of 3 to the A's. Welcome in to Bustin' Loose Baseball. Toby Altizer, Grant Paulson, producer, Darris Dameron. There is a lot to chew on in this episode, but Toby, I think we got to start right at the top with, you know, today as we taped, it was a Sunday afternoon, late afternoon game out in Oakland. The Nats led 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, then 4-1, and 6-1 before giving up 6 runs in the sixth and losing. Look, it's a building year, and I know the expectations are not that high. So sitting at 6-9, about where you expect them to be. But I can't help but feel like this is a bad loss, even by those standards. A very annoying, maddening loss, a game that got away. Trevor Williams was cruising into the sixth inning, ends up with 2 inherited runners being charged to him, 5 1/3, 3-run ball with 7 strikeouts. I think Davey Williams pulled him way too early. He was at 78 pitches. He'd given up back-to-back hits. He had runners on second and third. But look, I mean, I don't care about that. If he gives up those 2 runs, gets out of the inning through 6, save your bullpen a little bit, Davey. It's not like you got a day off tomorrow. This is why this guy's here. Let him pitch through those situations, give you a little bit of length. He's actually been really good this season. Instead, he goes to Derek Law, who'd allowed, I think, 5 of 6 inherited runners to score on the season. Both runners come home. He was awful. Davey left him in the game for way too many batters, in my opinion. And next thing you know, you look up and the ball game's been blown in the sixth inning and the Nats could never catch back up.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one because, you know, if you're Davey Martinez, I think you want to send Trevor Williams back out there. He gets into a little bit of a jam, but he's only at 78 pitches, to your point. Like, at some point, you got to let your guys pitch through this, because I think the bigger point of all of this is that this bullpen is starting to get really taxed. And I mean, it's partially because, you know, Gore had a fantastic outing that we're going to talk about, but 5 innings, right? You need some depth out of these pitchers, and you're not getting length out of these guys. And so Trevor Williams was pitching fantastic on Sunday and had an opportunity to get through 6, and he had a couple of base runners on, but it's a 6-1 lead. And so, to me, if you wanted to go to the bullpen, you brought Amos Willingham on the trip with you in Oakland. He was there the entire series as an arm, and he never pitched. Like, you can't keep trotting out Derek Law every single time that there's a situation. You can't throw Finnegan and Harvey and all these guys every single day. This is what happened last year at times, right? Mason Thompson was one of those guys last year that was fantastic for a stretch, and then it seemed like he got overworked, and then he never regained that effectiveness. You had, you know, Harvey struggle and then get on the injured list, and he needed some time off. And Finnegan, like, it just felt like they went to the same couple of guys every single day. away, and then all of a sudden, guys that were really good for a two-week stretch are bad because they've been overused. And I think that's a little bit of what happened to Derek Law today as we record on Sunday, because he'd been decently effective. Like, his ERA was pretty good, although he'd allowed a lot of inherited runners to score, like you said. Weems had been fairly effective and a really good reliever, and then he struggled again today because he'd pitched multiple days in a row. Floro pitched well, but he hadn't pitched in the series. So it's just, I don't think the bullpen management was, you know, as good as it could have been. Like, if Davey wanted to send Trevor Williams back out there for the sixth, then leave him out there until it's something where it's like, all right, I have to go get him. And that was not the point with what he did there. Like, he did not have to go get him there. Or if you wanted to use a bullpen arm, try to find someone. It's a 5-run game. You hope a guy like an Amos Willingham can get through an inning without giving up 5 or 6 runs. And he just ended up with the club for 3 games and didn't pitch, whereas you have some of these guys going 3 and 4 days in a row. So I think that Davey, at times, this is why I have an issue with him as a manager. I'm not a huge fan of the way that he manages a pitching staff, and it kind of blew up in their face today.
Great point on Willingham, by the way, being around for a few days when, by the way, you lost 2 games, right? And now he goes back down, and it basically just shortened your staff is kind of how you got around that issue. And everybody just was asked to do a little bit more, which is not ideal. Again, it's not like you have a day off coming up. They've got the Dodgers, not a fun team to have to deal with starting tomorrow. And then eventually you're coming back for the series with the Astros. They will have, I believe, they get a Thursday off day this week, sandwiched in between, right? So yeah, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday out in L.A., and then you come back Friday through Sunday with the Astros. So tough cooking here. Houston has finally gotten it going offensively a little bit late this week. But real quick on Williams and why I thought it was just, you know, really, really a bad decision to take him out of the game. I thought it was an egregious kind of overmanagement by Davey. So 6th inning begins, bottom of the 6th. He walks Toro. Rob Drake sucked all game long, the home plate umpire. He was terrible in this game. Terrible umpires this season. And maybe it's just that we have technology now to see it. I'm not sure. It is boiling my blood. It is time for the automated strike zone, at least the challenge system. It's out of control. But the first batter of the inning was Abraham Toro, who walked on 5 pitches. The 4th and 5th pitches of the at-bat were strikes. It was a strikeout. It should have been a 2-1 count, and then pitch number 4, strike 2, 2-2 count, and said it was 3-1. Pitch number 5 was middle in. I mean, it was the whole ball is in the strike zone. It's not even close, and it was called a ball. So twice, Williams gets screwed there. But it's not like if you go, well, he walked him, he was tired, everything was up, he wasn't following through, and it couldn't. No, not at all. It was just a bad sequence for the umpire, and so there's a walk and a runner on. His next batter, he bears down, and he's dropping inside slide pieces on a right-hander under his hands, and he gets a strikeout. Then Blade guesses correctly in a right-left matchup, 88-mile-an-hour four-seamer middle-middle, and he clubs it for a double. Okay, so it stays in the yard, looked like it might have gone out, and then it ended up being an extra base hit. It was a missile. So it's 2nd and 3rd with 1 out then. I mentioned the pitch count already. The pitch count is not even a factor. And he goes to the pen just like that. Unnecessarily. Just game management. This situation alone, the guy has been cruising since the first inning. But then you add in the context, as you said, of how rare it is that any of your starters get deep. The fact that you're going to be debuting, we'll talk about Mitchell Parker's first game against the Dodgers. You know, a guy who's coming from AAA who hasn't pitched in a week and change against one of the great teams and lineups in baseball tomorrow. Like the fact that the guy on the mound is your veteran who you pay essentially to get kicked in the teeth if need be and to be out there and wear it a little bit longer into games. Like nothing about the situation made any sense to me. But then he goes and gets Law, who's been up and down and whatever, you know, he struggles. I couldn't believe how long Law was allowed. He didn't have it. Like, and that's the other thing sometimes with Davey that I find frustrating. And I think Davey does a lot of things well. He is an unbelievable communicator and people person, and the players love him. And he's a great manager of people. And I think he even has some strengths in game, right? tapping into some of the numbers and the analytics more than certainly his predecessor Dusty and some other guys have. But one of the things that sometimes frustrates me is, and this is more of a easy to manage from, you know, me being fat sitting in my basement, and this is all a baseball, but like you can tell pretty quickly if a reliever doesn't have it. And just the, well, he'll figure it out back of the baseball card, this is his role thing. No. You know, we got a rule as to how many batters you got to face. Like, you got to start planning to help that guy out a little bit. And it just seemed like they were going to sink or swim with Law, and they didn't end up getting him out of there until it was too late. Now, Weems came in and couldn't quite stop the bleeding to save the game, but they already had all the inherited runners on to do all the damage. So we can stop breaking down the one game, but I just thought that was a really, really bad inning in terms of decision-making. I thought it also led to, you know, the inability to say, man, Trevor Williams is pitching his butt off. He's been really good so far for the most part through three starts this season. And it leaves you a sour taste in your mouth with the bullpen. As good as Weems has been, 1.4 ERA in the year. Floro's been 1.2 ERA. Barnes had a good inning. He's got an ERA a little over three. Still, you come out of the game after the four runs given up by the pen, plus the two inherited runners charged to Williams, and you feel like it was a real dud.
Well, and this is where it's tough, Grant, because every single one of these games in this series was close. You know, it was 6-1. You thought, okay, this could maybe be the laugher, but you know, he didn't necessarily try to manage it as a high leverage situation, ended up turning into a high leverage situation. So every game in this series was close. And the issue is, you think, okay, so it's a close game. It's a one-run ball game, a two-run ball game. Let's go to the A relievers. And you just can't do that every single day. I get that, you know, the situation calls for these guys to come in, but sometimes you're going to have to use other guys. You know, like, you can't trot the same, you know, guy out there every single time it's a one-run game in the sixth inning because the pitcher couldn't get through six innings. And frankly, the national starters have to do a better job. Like, we're going to talk about Gore. Gore was fantastic, was awesome. 11 Ks in five innings. I think either one of the first or the first Nationals pitcher to ever do that. That's awesome. Give me six innings, please. You have to be able to get some length out of these guys. And that's also something, like you said, you have to understand. You know, JoJo, when he's out there, he hasn't proved that he can consistently go deep in games. Gore, he's still learning. He's got elite stuff. But that's one thing we've talked about, his growth is this year. He's got to go deeper in the ball games. You know, Jake Irvin at times, he's still learning. He's got to go deeper into ball games. Trevor Williams and Patrick Corbin are the guys that, like, sorry, you're going to have to throw 90 pitches regardless. And if it means you get through six, awesome. You're going to have to wear some of these outings that aren't great. Or in this case today, try and work through some of those issues so I can save some of the arms in the pen. But they've got to find a way to make it so that they're not overusing the pen, because, you know, I think overall the pen has been fairly effective this year. But there have been a couple instances where, you know, Kyle Finnegan blows it. You can live with that, right? That happens to a closer. Every now and then you're going to leave a pitch up and a guy's going to hit one, or they're going to hit a good pitch and get a little schlinker, or like, you know, whatever it is. You know, that's just baseball. But at some point, when you start overusing guys, that's how you get to injuries, and that's how you get to guys not, you know, just losing effectiveness. There's got to be a way, whether it's going to other guys in the bullpen or getting more length out of the starters. There's just a myriad of reasons why, you know, this bullpen, I think, today, as on Sunday, kind of imploded a little bit, and it's something that we're going to have to monitor going forward, because it's not like it's just going to disappear when you're playing three more in 3 days.
No doubt. But that's part of why, too, I would push back a little bit on the blaming of the starters not getting deep enough. You know, Jake Irvin went six innings in the first game of this series. By the way, he was awesome. We could talk about that. Yep. He threw 74 pitches and then was yanked. You know, that is a predetermined, basically, that is Davey going, you're not facing the lineup again, essentially. Yeah. 74 pitches. The guy is on autopilot. He's not breaking a sweat, basically. Now, it's a really tight game, and maybe they just decide, hey, it's early in the season, let's not give him another up-down or something. You cannot be more efficient than 74 pitches through six innings. You can't. That's a Davey decision. That's an organizational, you know, Tampa Bay Rays type, like, sorry, you don't get to face this guy anymore thing. He easily could have gone at least seven, at least. Maybe eight innings if they just said, you're going to go till either you start to get in big trouble because you look tired, or you throw 100 pitches. They elected not to do that. So that was not Jake Irvin's fault. He, A, went deep, and B, could have gone a lot deeper. And to a lesser extent, I would say the exact same thing about Mackenzie Gore and the five-inning outing that you referenced. Now, he was not nearly as efficient. He was hunting some strikeouts, some longer counts, obviously, but he only had the one walk, only had four base hits. But he was at 90 pitches. You know, it's not like it was like 103 pitches through five, and there's no decision to be made there. I think he had more pitches than that in his first start of the year against the Pirates in the home opener and came back out for the sixth on a cold night. Like, I don't know why they did that. Maybe Davey remembered that Pittsburgh game and, the sixth inning where he only got the one out and had a couple base runners on, and maybe he was nervous or didn't want to run it back. Not sure. I 100%, if, this talk all spring about, like, McKenzie's the guy and, the opening day at home, you let it look like that. This was not that. So I'm with you on the bullpen. I'm with you on getting guys deeper. I think for the most part here over the last few days, though, that was more a Davey thing than the pitchers themselves, because I actually thought in all three games in this series, and that should have been, it's a shame they lose two out of three, because if they won the series, we'd be talking about, yes, game one, and by the way, most of game two, they just couldn't come through with runners in scoring position. So the offense really was at a premium, but you got a really good start from Irvin, dominant start from Gore, we can get deeper into in a moment, and then Trevor Williams was very solid. But you get nothing to show for it. You lose with a lose. You leave, I should say, with a losing series. Speaking of Gore, we should dive deeper into that outing because he's so important. And yep, that was the most dominant probably we've seen him. I mean, he's had a couple of outings, one against the Royals, I think, last year, that looked like that. But now through three starts, Tobes, 2.81 ERA would actually be under 2.5 if not for the inherited runner being pegged to him that was given up by another pitcher in his first start against Pittsburgh. But 2-0 record through three starts, 23 Ks in 16 innings after the 11 punches this last time out. Whips about 1.1. So some of the major numbers look pretty good. We could dive into the analytics on him as well. But we wanted the breakout. We wanted to see him look more like a frontline starter. It's very early, but it's certainly happening.
Yeah, I mean, this is similar to what I liked about his last start in that the fastball was working and he just stuck with the fastball. Like, if you look at his numbers for this game, I believe he threw like 58% fastballs. It's something that he had working that day and he just stuck with it. And to me, that was the key for him. Yeah, he threw out of 90 pitches, he threw 52 fastballs. Wow. To me, if you look at what the difference was between Gore in 2022 and last season, it was his fastball. His fastball went from having, I believe, a run value of 5, which the higher number is better, to a -1 last year. It was not very good last year for whatever reason, and he's got too good of stuff. You know, I've seen this guy throw a pitch up in the zone that makes Austin Riley look foolish or Matt Olson look foolish or some really good hitters in this league look foolish with fastballs up in the zone, and sometimes I think he's a little bit too fine or overthinks things. It's clear in his last two starts, he's realized that number one was working and he just stuck with it. He did it and he looked fantastic. You'd like to see him be more efficient so he can go deeper into these outings. But like you said, 90 pitches, you can probably send him back out there if you want. That's one, though, I think that is a little bit less debatable for, Davey. But either way, I love seeing the ace type stuff out of Mackenzie Gore where he's just sitting dudes down and he's doing what he's supposed to. Like, we're not going to, try to make this up. Like, the A's aren't very good. They're going to be one of the worst teams in baseball once again this year, but I'd rather see you go out there and dominate than suck. And he went out there and dominated a pretty poor A's lineup.
Yeah. How about this? 44 swings against him, 20 swings and misses. That is astounding dominance and stuff and just baffling amount of being better than a big league lineup. 45% of the swings against him were swings and misses in the game. That's crazy. Fastball sat 96. He touched 98. He looked like the real deal, everything that's been advertised. Now we're closing in on, as I said, I think it's like 16 innings, but three starts into the year. So you start to now deeper dive into some of, how he's sitting among pitchers in baseball. Whiff percentage, 89th percentile. Strikeout percentage, 92nd percentile. You look at average extension on the velocity, 78th. Fastball velo, 92nd percentile. XERA, 64th. X batting average, 65th. Like, he's doing a lot of things really, really well. The only area where he's struggled, if you care at all, is it's been a lot of fly balls. He doesn't get many ground balls, but he pitches up in the zone. I think guys often get under it because of that. He gets lots of swings and misses with the fastball. And I just think, generally speaking, like, you are now seeing the growth of who will be the number one this season for this team. And last year, Gray had the great first half and made an all-star team. I think it's going to be Mackenzie Gore, potentially, who's representing the Nats at the all-star game this year, if he can have the type of first half that I think he's capable of. Because remember, he flashed constantly last year. He had plenty of really, really good dominant starts. It was just once every six or seven times out, he'd give up a six spot, right? And sometimes he got hit hard. A lot of the time, though, it was, you know, a three-run homer in the first, and then he gave up, you know, another two runs in the third, and then an inherited runner comes around to score in the sixth or whatever, and it's five-plus, six earned runs, and it's a bad line. And there were enough of those that his numbers at the end of the year, unless you watched him, you maybe aren't overly impressed. But for people who have routinely been watching this guy, really dating back, he's a top five pick for a reason. Early on, he was leading the NL and ERA through a handful of starts with the Padres when he first came up. Like, there's never really been a question about the upside for Mackenzie Gore.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, this is a guy that was once, I believe, the top pitching prospect in all of baseball. And just to point something out here for the nerdy people that love the extra stuff, you mentioned the extension and you mentioned the fastball velo. This is why I think he can live off the fastball. Like, he can throw it 50% of the time. He's 92nd percentile in extension. He's 92nd percentile in fastball velo at 96.8. So that 96.8 is probably playing 98-99, and he's touched 98-99 this year, so that's playing upwards of triple digits. So
yeah,
I think if he can live up in the zone and he can locate that fastball and just not try to be too fine, I think if anything you could learn from last year, if you're Mackenzie Gore, it's go back and watch some of your starts and look at the swings that dudes are putting on it, and not just, you know, nobodies, but really good players. Look at some of the swings and you realize my stuff is pretty good. I don't have to be perfect because my stuff is that good. And I think you're starting to see a little bit of that arrogance on the mound. And that's a good thing for him because he's got the stuff to do it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I want to talk Joey Meneses as we pivot from somebody who's been exciting and very good to someone who has not been. Who came into the game on Sunday, one for his last 12, and I think he had three hits in his last 22 at-bats, something like that. He was hitting 196, sans power. His OPS was sub-500. His OPS plus, so just so you guys know, if I ever drop or Toby ever drops OPS plus, the league average hitter is 100. So every point over that, you're basically a percentage point better than the average player in baseball. If you're on the other side of 100, lower than the number, you know, you are, say, a 90 OPS plus, you're 10% below league average. His OPS plus is a gross 39. Ooh. Coming into play. Now, he did, to his credit, put together a couple of better at-bats, I would say, and actually had something to show for it with a knock and being able to drive in runs on Sunday. But nothing I'm pointing out with him or generally ever is just about a small, like, one-game, couple of at-bat sample. And even in the Meneses case, I hesitate to bring this up because it's so early into the season. But I guess my caveat's going to be this isn't just about 45 at-bats for me, right? This is also about having now watched him for the better part of 2 years before this. This is about his track record where he was a career minor leaguer who had never made it to the major leagues before he was 30. He's getting ready to be 32. He is a DH first baseman who doesn't really hit for power. Now, he's not going to hit many home runs. We saw that last year. We are seeing that again. For what it's worth, probably not a lot. He had a very bad spring training. And I just don't think the ABs look good. Like, I don't think the swing, I don't pretend to be a scout, but I don't think it looks good. But, like, I guess I would ask anyone right now, like, what is his calling card? He was right at league average offensively with his OPS last season. 722 OPS plus was 99. All right, so literally just a hair below a league average hitter. But 13 home runs in 154 games. The guy played every single day last year, drove in 89, but just 13 home runs. And last year, the whole key to his success, to his role on the club, Toby, you know this, he produced runs. When there were ducks on the pond, he came through. I don't think that was sustainable or kind of expected again early on, very early on, 12 games in, 13 games in. It's been the opposite of that this year. And I just, in general, a guy that can't help me at any position defensively. Great story. I love Joey Meneses' story. My daughter's favorite player, maybe, right? But what is it that you'd say you'd do here, to quote the movie Office Space? Like, it's not Office Space, is it? Maybe it is. What is it that you'd say? Yeah, it is. I don't know, man. What is it that he'd say he does here?
And that's the tough part, Grant, because this is a guy that I think in another organization for, you know, maybe a winning ball club as a guy that comes off the bench or hits lower in the order, I think that that'd be fine, right? But where does he fit in a Nationals team that, let's be frank, isn't winning 100 games this year, isn't winning 90 games this year, probably isn't winning 80 games this year? So this is a team that's going to be, you know, one of the lower teams in the leagues in terms of wins, and you're basically saying this guy is going to help us win. And you say, well, how? He's just going to drive in runs. That's it. He's not going to hit for power. Like you said, he's not going to play defense because, you know, even if he does play at first base, I don't feel good, and I definitely don't want him in there over Joey Gallo. He definitely can't play the outfield. We've seen that fiasco before. And so what exactly does he do? And I don't think there is a clear answer. So to me, you know, I don't know that right now
if
it feels
he hit
like
for more power, you could say ideal bad team DH. You know,
sure.
He'll hit 275. He'll give you some pro ABs. He'll come through with runners in scoring position. And he'll hit, I'm making this up, but 20 home runs. Really, it's 10-ish home runs. And it's 265-ish. And, you know, that's fine, I guess. But, like, aren't you intrigued to see someone else? Like, Juan Yepes is only 26, the Venezuelan kid that's playing, that has the same kind of profile, a first base DH at AAA. He's off to a 325 start with a 1050 ops and already has three homers in the minors. We've seen him hit 27 home runs in the minors before, and he had a good spring. That's not more interesting than Joey Meneses? It is to me.
Yeah, and I know it sounds dumb because you're like, oh, he's just a ball player that helps you win ball games by driving in runs, but I don't want him taking a spot from somebody, Grant. Like, it's one thing to have him on a ball club where he's consistently producing and you're winning ball games, but for him to just be there just to occasionally drive in runs, and he has not looked good so far this season, like, I don't want him taking at-bats away from, you know, like a realistic scenario that's coming up that this team's going to have to make a decision on very soon is Nick Senzel's going to be ready to play again. And you're going to have to go back to the decision that we talked about before the season when we were talking about the opening day roster. Is it Trey Lipscomb? Is it Nunez? Is it Luis Garcia? What do you do? Well, to be honest with you, I'd rather see Senzel than Joey Meneses. Or I'd rather see, like you said, Juan Yepes. Or name your prospect.
But
I just don't want
you
him
this,
taking at-bats
specific
away
to what you're talking about. So the idea is, I think, you're getting to, and the same fear I have, that you send Lipscomb down to bring up the rehabbing Nick Senzel. But my question would be, if you're saying we'll move on from Meneses and just thank him for his time, but how does that, like, he doesn't play the same position as either of those guys. So how does that work?
He doesn't play any position.
So you would just DH Lipscomb or Senzel?
Yeah, you can find a spot for guys, right? I mean, Joey Meneses is basically DHing every day. We actually saw Trey Lipscomb move over to first base in the Oakland series. So if need be, if you're worried about a backup first baseman, Lipscomb can play over there. So just to me, like, I have no issue with Joey Meneses. He kind of is what he is, right? There's nothing wrong with him as a ball player. He kind of is exactly that, and he had a hot, you know, second half in 2022. And so he kind of gave guys hope of what he really wasn't, which was a power bat. Instead, he's kind of an average guy that hits for a little bit of power, but mostly just drives in runs by hitting singles all over the place. That's fine, but you don't play any defense and you're not very fast either. So he just doesn't fit the Nationals. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I don't want him taking at bats away from guys when they're ready to come up. So to me, Grant, like, it's fine for now. And it'll probably be fine for
Senzel,
couple of weeks.
I mean, we're taping this on Sunday. Senzel could be up in a day or two, right?
And so
point's true. Like 100, and I 100% agree with you. I haven't really thought about it in these terms. And by the way, they're not going to do what you and I are advocating for. But like, yeah, Senzel's can be your DH, or if you want him to play third, because you know Lipscomb has not shined there. Although I think the really good has been great. It's just that the routine is not quite turned into routine yet. But yeah, then keep him up, and you can DH him or something. I want him in the big leagues, getting at bats, getting experience, learning, and being around the best staff that you've got in your org, theoretically, which is your major league staff. I actually think that's a really sharp point. But I fully anticipate more of the Meneses experience. I just, you know, I will also say this, and again, this sounds like now beat up on Joey Meneses time, and that isn't my intention. We're just kind of making roster observations. It does feel like he just has a propensity in big spots to roll over, and you know, you almost feel the double play coming.
Yeah,
you know, it's just the routine two hopper Taylor made, and I'm trying not to make it about that, because really results aren't the end all be all here. It's not like they're blocking a big league ready first base DH either. Like if just in a hypothetical, if like Yoani Morales as a full time first baseman 2 years from now was watching Meneses, well, I'd be losing my mind. That's not what's going on here. The question is, do you want to get creative with the roster otherwise or not? And my guess is, and I don't know if you agree with this, I think Lipscomb probably gets sent down.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Lipscomb, but it's just a shame because, like I said, there's nothing wrong with what Joey Meneses does. It just doesn't fit this team. Like, this team isn't trying to win 100 ball games. I think that he's perfect for someone that needs a guy off the bench that you feel like can come up in a big spot and drive some runners in, or whatever the case may be. I just think that he doesn't fit what this Nats team is trying to do, but then at the same point, I don't know that anyone's going to trade for him. So it is kind of a predicament for Mike Rizzo and the Nats.